Time for Wrigley's Spearmint.
The March of Time.
The makers of Wrigley's Spearmint Gum bring you the March of Time just as they present their own products for your enjoyment. This is an exciting year. What events it will bring forth, no man can tell. But come what may, you can depend upon the editors of Time to bring you their swift reenactment of these memorable events. So, too, you can always depend upon Wrigley's for quality and satisfaction.
Tonight, the editors of Time, the weekly news magazine, raise the curtain on their reenactment of the scenes which today have added one more dramatic page to history, to the March of Time.
Friday, April 17th, 1936. Today in Washington, D.C. is reported an episode in the United States Capitol building when two of the Capitol's night watchmen are making their rounds of the empty corridors of the Senate wing.
Say, what do you make of this?
What?
This door, it's standing ajar. I didn't notice that when we came through here before.
No, this is one of those old caucus rooms they never use anymore. Probably hasn't been locked.
Yeah, just the same, I'm going to have a look around.
Okay. See you in a minute.
Hey, here's something.
Yeah, what's that?
Here, look at this.
Huh, an old coat. Yeah, that's funny. I wonder how that got in here.
Hey, we'd better search every room in the building.
Oh, take it easy. Maybe one of the senators.
Hey, what's that?
There must be a prowler. Someone's broken into the Capitol.
Come on, it's right down the corridor here.
Hey, look in the Senate restaurant.
Cover the front door. The others are all locked. I'll watch the kitchen here.
All right. Hey, he's right in there, by the icebox.
Snap the lights, but stay there. All right, fella. We got you covered. Come on out there.
Yeah, okay, boss. I'm coming. Don't shoot. Please don't shoot me.
What's the idea of breaking into this building?
I ain't breaking, boss. I lives here.
What do you mean, live here?
This is all the home I got, the United States Capitol. I guess I live here about a year now.
Are you trying to kid us?
No, 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 boss. That's the truth. I figured they got all these warm rooms here, and some of them they ain't even using the daytime. They never miss what little I eat out of the Senate icebox. I don't bother nobody.
Well, I guess the judge will put you where you can't bother anybody.
I expect so, boss. You know, I hate to leave the old Capitol building. It's the finest home I ever had.
Hustled off to jail, Negro prowler Fulton Bond gives his age as 22. His address as the United States Capitol, Senate Wing. Is today formally assured of an indefinite residence in his new home, Washington's 5th Precinct Jail. Today in Addis Ababa, without a warning, out of the north zoom two giant Italian bombers. Begin to drop ominous black missiles. Fearing deadly gas bombs, the panic-stricken natives frantically plug their noses with eucalyptus leaves as primitive gas masks, scatter in all directions. As the planes swoop low, sharp eyes from below detect empty bomb racks, and the supposed gas bombs turn out to be rocket flares, a fireworks display of green, white, and red, the Italian tricolors, to taunt the frightened blacks. Casualties? Two wrecked automobiles, a dozen mules killed in the stampede. As the playful fascist warhawks fly back to Deschi, in Geneva, Switzerland today, to the Hotel Les Berges, comes a group of news hawks to see Italy's Baron Pompeo Aloisi.
Baron Aloisi, you told Salvatore di Madriaga that there were too many of us journalists here in Geneva. Is that right?
Gentlemen, gentlemen, surely Signor di Madriaga did not take my little joke seriously. After all, Il Duce himself is a journalist, one of the best.
Then the real reason is to snub the League?
Well, gentlemen, the League penalizes Italy. We can have our little sanction against Geneva, turnabout, you know.
You put a pretty tough problem up to the League today, Baron Aloisi.
It is a simple problem, gentlemen. Which does the League prefer? Peace or another war to end war? If the Committee of 13 will only be patient a little while, it can meet in perfect safety if it wishes, even in Addis Ababa. I assure you, peace is imminent.
So again in Geneva, Italy taunts the League of Nations Peace Committee, frightened by the awful alternative of accepting or defying Il Duce's unconditional conquest of Ethiopia. And today, League effort to enforce peace collapses entirely, and the committee passes the buck to a full League Council Monday. And tonight in Rome, Il Duce can scarcely contain himself. And from Venezia Palace leaks an inspired rumor to cap a cocky Italian day, reaching the ears of United Pressman Stuart Brown.
According to sources close to Mussolini, When Haile Selassie learned the Italian forces were within 93 miles of Addis Ababa, he informed Italian General Headquarters he was ready to abdicate in favor of Crown Prince Asfawusa. The Crown Prince will negotiate peace terms unconditionally, and he has consented to submit his name to the Italians as puppet emperor. Il Duce instructed Marshal Pietro Badoglio for terms for an armistice and the emperor's abdication. Italy claims to have won its 6.5 months campaign, and the undeclared war is over.
Today in Washington, in the Senate of the United States, comes to an end the 13th federal impeachment trial in 147 years of congressional history. As small, white-haired federal district judge Halstead L. Ritter, Republican of Florida, answers a House impeachment charging him with general misconduct in office. For 10 days, the Senate has heard testimony from the prosecution and defense on 7 different charges against Judge Ritter, as voiced in the House of Representatives.
Whereas federal district judge Halstead L. Ritter granted an exorbitant receivership fee of $75,000 to one Albert L. Rankin, an attorney, formerly Judge Ritter's law partner, and whereas Judge Ritter then accepted a rebate of $4,500 out of the same fee, and whereas Judge Ritter continued the private practice of law, and whereas he has violated the sacred trust of his office, he should therefore be removed as judge of the Southern District of Florida.
Declares Judge Ritter in his own defense.
Yes, I did accept $4,500 from Mr. Rankin, but the money was in payment of an honest debt. When President Coolidge appointed me to the bench in 1929, I sold Mr. Rankin my interest in our law firm for cash. He was my friend. No receipt was necessary. I've tried 7,000 cases, and you go back 6 years to this single case in my first year on the bench. Gentlemen, you must believe me.
For 2 days, 67-year-old Halstead Ritter waits nervously as the Senate goes into secret informal deliberation. Then at 12 o'clock noon today, the aged jurist takes a seat in the well of the Senate chamber as the Senate reconvenes to vote formally on each of the 7 charges filed against him. 5 more charges. Not guilty on 6 charges. The Senate comes to the 7th, a general summary on the other 6. Confident, his face already beaming with gratitude, the old judge leans forward as the final vote is announced.
On this 7th and final vote, 56 senators have voted guilty and 28 senators have voted not guilty. 2/3 have voted guilty and the respondent is adjudged guilty. Therefore, federal Judge Ritter is hereby automatically removed from the high office given him by the President of the United States.
Today in Manhattan, Professor Jane Dorsey Zimmerman, speech expert and recent critic of Franklin Delano Roosevelt's radio voice, offers some constructive advice.
The only way to overcome a sour voice is to sing on all occasions. Some of us sing in the bathtub, but bathtub singing is not enough. When you get up in the morning, do not grunt or mumble good morning. Sing it. Good morning, wifey darling, happy morning, dear to you. When you ask for the butter at breakfast, make it musical, to the tune of Swanee River, for instance. Please pass the butter over to me. Or the quartet from Rigoletto. Please pass the butter over here. Instead of irritably ordering your child to bed, sing to him. Never say, you go to bed at once or I'll slap you to sleep.
Today in Salzburg, Austria, occurs an event which recalls from long obscurity a name once familiar to the tongues of kings and emperors, that of Vladimir von Giesingen, pre-war minister of Serbia, a proud old Franz Josef, Emperor of Austria-Hungary. It is July 25th, 1914, in the Serbian capital of Belgrade. Sitting tensely in the quiet of his legation study is General von Giesingen. Already fallen before the bullet of an assassin in the Serbian village of Sarajevo is Austrian Archduke Ferdinand. Already has General von Gislingen presented to Serbia the crushing ultimatum of his Austrian government. Now, with his diplomatic passports already in his pocket, with horse cabs standing fretfully in the legation courtyard, he waits with his wife and secretary for the Serbian answer.
He will not come now, I'm sure of it.
If he does not come, Excellency?
If he does not come, if the Serbian government makes no answer to my ultimatum, it is war. What time is it now?
It is 6:05.
And he will not come. At 6 o'clock, the 48 hours expire. Evesen, are you packed?
Vladimir, could you not wait a little past the hour? Perhaps some circumstance...
Quick, behind the curtains, both of you. If it is the Serbian Prime Minister, I must be alone with him. But I want you to listen, every word. I may need witnesses. Quickly now, hide. Show the Serbian Premier in now, please.
His Excellency Nikola Basic, Prime Minister of Serbia.
Your Excellency.
General von Gislingen.
Has Serbia accepted the terms of Austria's ultimatum, Your Excellency?
We have accepted all that was possible, General. For the rest, we must rely upon your chivalry.
I take it from your answer that you have not accepted the ultimatum in full, as my government required.
No free people, General von Gislingen, could have accepted all the humiliating conditions which you have wished to impose upon us.
Very well, Your Excellency. We shall have Austria's answer within the hour.
Good day, General.
Herr Titan, my briefcase.
Yes, Excellency.
Liebchen, have the servants take our luggage to the carriage.
Will you be writing for long, Vladimir?
I'm not writing. I'm signing a document which has been prepared in advance. A declaration of war.
Thus, with the sultry summer afternoon, the golden age of Europe draws swiftly to a close. Set into ponderous motion by the scratching of General von Giesingen's pen across his country's declaration of war against tiny Serbia, are the relentless forces which are to drive him into obscurity and neglect, which starts the tragic panorama of the war. Forgotten is the name of General von Giesingen, as the world picks up again threads of normal life, begins to build new cities, new states, and then new armies. And today, as it must to all men, death comes to General von Vladimir Giesingen, 76, one-time minister to the now extinct Kingdom of Serbia, from the now dismembered Empire of Austria-Hungary, who in the last year of his life reflected sadly on the past and the ominous parallel of the future.
Austria was not at fault. It was the diplomats of Europe who brought on the war. Yet, what one of us could foresee what our actions of that fateful summer would bring forth? Had I been able to see into the future on that summer day, I could never have played the part I did. And now they begin again. New diplomats, new nations, but the same old diplomatic game. I wish I could tell them how they will feel when they come to the end of life, as I have now.
Time marches on.
You are listening to The March of Time, the reenactment of memorable scenes from the news of the world, prepared and presented by the editors of Time.
Time marches on, and often at a dangerous pace. When you drive your car, does the speedometer gradually creep up over the speed limit? Do you find yourself driving faster than you meant to? Well, the next time you take out your car, buy a package of Wrigley's Spearmint Gum. Relax behind the wheel and let the traffic cop chase somebody else. You'll enjoy driving more than ever. Really do this and convince yourself.
Again Monday night at this same hour, and every night, Monday through Friday, the March of Time.
Time marches on. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System. WABC, New York.